Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, False Claims Act and Seal Violations Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On November 1st, 2016, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in State Farm Fire and Casualty Co. v. U.S. X. Rel. Rigsby. State Farm Fire and Casualty Co. administered separate wind and flood damage policies in the Gulf Coast area at the time of Hurricane Katrina. In general, State Farm was responsible for paying wind damage from its own assets, while federal funds would pay for flood damage. The Rigsby sisters were State Farm claims adjusters, who allegedly discovered in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina that, with respect to properties covered under both wind and flood policies, State Farm was unlawfully classifying wind damage as flood damage in order to offload the cost of payment onto the federal government. Rigsby sued on behalf of the United States under the provisions of the Federal False Claims Act, and continued to litigate the case after the United States declined to intervene. The district court focused discovery and trial on a single bellwether claim, and the jury found an FCA violation and awarded damages. Both sides appealed, with the Rigsbys, classified under the FCA as relators, seeking additional discovery to uncover and pursue other similar FCA violations by State Farm, and State Farm arguing, among other things, that the case should be dismissed because the Rigsby's counsel had violated the FCA seal requirement by disclosing the existence of the FCA lawsuit to various news outlets. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit acknowledged the seal violation, but concluded after applying a multi-factor test that the breach did not warrant dismissal here. The question now before the Supreme Court is what standard governs the decision whether to dismiss a relator's claim for violation of the False Claims Act's seal requirement, an issue on which the Federal Circuit Courts of Appeals have split three ways. To discuss the case, we have Corey Andrews, who is Senior Litigation Counsel at the Washington Legal Foundation. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Andrews.
So State Farm X. Rel. Rigsby is a case brought under the False Claims Act. And for those who may be unfamiliar with it, the False Claims Act imposes liability on persons and companies who defraud the federal government. The Act's key TAM provisions allow private individuals with knowledge of fraud perpetrated against the government to bring suit in the name of the government. So they're literally standing in the shoes of the government. The government then receives notice of the suit, and it can intervene if it wishes to and take over the litigation. Now, to incentivize these key TAM relators to come forward and to expose fraud, the Act authorizes a bounty of up to 30% on all recoveries and has a provision for attorney's fees as well. So by way of background, the relators in this case, Corey and Carrie Rigsby, are former claims adjusters who provided third-party services to State Farm. They allege that State Farm submitted a false claim to the federal government's flood insurance program in connection with a Biloxi, Mississippi homeowners policy claim in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. According to the Rigsbys, State Farm instructed claims adjusters to mischaracterize wind damage caused by Hurricane Katrina, which would be covered under State Farm's homeowners policy, as flood damage covered by the National Flood Insurance Program. Now, among other things, the False Claim Act's key TAM provision requires that a relator's complaint shall be filed in camera and shall remain under seal for at least 60 days until the court orders the complaint to be served against the defendant. That gives the government time to conduct its own investigation, and the government can obtain an additional extension of the 60-day period, as it did in this case, while it continues its investigation. The statute does not provide what consequence, if any, should follow a relator's violation of that seal requirement. And the circuits are split as to whether the suit must be dismissed automatically if the seal is violated, which is a rule that the Sixth Circuit has adopted, or whether some sort of balancing test considering various factors should be entrusted to the court's discretion. And so that is actually the question presented in this case, where the Rigsbys and their attorney repeatedly violated the seal requirement by notifying news organizations and others about the existence and nature of their key TAM suit. Specifically, the Rigsby's attorney hired a prominent Washington, D.C.-based public relations firm to disclose the details of their suit to national media outlets including ABC, CBS, the Associated Press, and the New York Times, resulting in nationwide print and television coverage. The Rigsby sisters and their attorney also met with their congressman, who publicly excoriated State Farm from the well of the House, making its way into the congressional record. And then they disclosed the existence of the QI-TAM suit itself at a meeting of the House Oversight Investigations Committee. Their congressman, rather, disclosed the existence at a committee meeting. So on the basis of all of these seal violations, State Farm moved unsuccessfully below to dismiss the suit. The district court went on to award the Rigsby's 30% of more than $750,000 award against State Farm and $2.9 million in attorney's fees and costs. So the Fifth Circuit affirmed the district court's refusal to dismiss the relator's claims. And in doing so, it borrowed a balancing test from the Ninth Circuit, and it held that because State Farm had not been able to show that the seal violation hampered in any way the government's investigation, that no dismissal was warranted. The panel even said, if we presume bad faith on the part of the respondents, we conclude that because the government was not harmed, the fundamental purpose of the seal requirement was not undermined. So State Farm urges the Supreme Court to adopt the Sixth Circuit's bright line automatic dismissal rule for QI-TAM seal violations. And it points to the text and the structure of the statute to argue that the seal requirement really operates as a mandatory precondition to suit. The Act states that the complaint shall be filed in camera and shall remain under seal, making the maintenance of the seal mandatory, not permissive. And in the alternative, State Farm says even if dismissal is discretionary and not mandatory, that to allow this suit to proceed, despite the relator's egregious and willful and bad faith seal violations, would be effectively to write the seal requirements out of the statute. And so State Farm urges the court that when it adopts a balancing test, that any balancing test should consider bad faith and the severity of the violation as sort of the primary factors. In response, the relators in this case argue that nothing in the statute specifies the consequence or remedy for a seal violation, which leaves the matter entirely to the broad discretion of the district court. So it was not an abuse of discretion in this case for the district court to decline State Farm's request to dismiss the relators in a case where no harm to the government ever occurred. Seal violations occur, they say, in less than 0.5% of all FCA cases. And because the whole point of the QI-TAM provision is to empower private plaintiffs to punish fraud, dismissal of a meritorious QI-TAM action would permit a windfall for the defendant while allowing fraud against the government to go unpunished. Now, the Solicitor General also appeared as an amicus in the case to express the view of the United States. And so the government agrees that with the relators that by failing to specify a penalty, Congress intended for the enforcement of QI-TAM seals, like, you know, all seals and protective orders, to be left to the discretion of district judges. And again, because the QI-TAM seal exists to protect the integrity of the government's investigation, it's harm to the government that it seems to be key. And since the government was not prejudiced here by the seal violation, there is no abuse of discretion. Now, at the same time, the government concedes that it would not have been an abuse of discretion had the district court dismissed the relator's case, but that the court simply was not obliged to do so. And the government also agrees with State Farm that harm to the defendant could also be an appropriate consideration to take into account in any balancing test. So oral argument in the case was held on Tuesday. I've had the pleasure of attending dozens of Supreme Court arguments, and this one was really one of the most effectively argued cases I've ever seen on both sides. Kathleen Sullivan of Quinn Emanuel argued on behalf of State Farm. Tejinder Singh of Goldstein and Russell argued on behalf of the relators, and John Bash appeared on behalf of the United States. Unlike many oral arguments, there were no factions or sort of voting blocks that were readily apparent from the questioning. In fact, there seemed to be a fair amount of like-mindedness among the justices based on all of their questions. None of the justices seemed particularly eager or likely to adopt the automatic per se dismissal rule urged by State Farm, in part because many seal violations they thought may be inadvertent or trivial or just otherwise de minimis. And although Kathleen Sullivan conceded that they could certainly create a de minimis exception, no justice showed much interest in that idea. But at the same time, many justices made it clear that they are not entirely sanguine about what happened in this case. I thought Kathleen Sullivan did a good job of rebutting any suggestion that a QI-TAM defendant receives an automatic windfall any time the relator's claims are dismissed. As she pointed out, under the statute, the government can always intervene at any time, even after dismissal, and by statute, its case will always relate back to the time of the filing of the original complaint, so there's never any statute of limitations problem. And so there really doesn't need to be any fear of windfall in a case where the government believes that it has actually been defrauded. And she reminded the court that, incidentally, in this case, the government's own investigation found no evidence that wind damage had been falsely attributed to flood damage by State Farm or that flood insurance ever paid for wind damage. She also argued that affirming the Fifth Circuit in this case would send a clear message to QI-TAM seal violators to just go ahead and leak away. And Justice Breyer in particular certainly seemed to take that concern very seriously. And he noted several times throughout oral argument that it's not just the government that has a very real interest in ensuring that the seals are honored, but that the judiciary, after all, seals are the creatures of court orders. The judiciary and the integrity of the judiciary itself has an interest that court orders are not so breezily ignored like they were in this case. Ms. Sullivan also made a compelling case that any harm resulting from the seal violation should be evaluated ex ante at the time of the violation and not ex post, as the Fifth Circuit did in this case. She said it should be of no benefit to the relators if no harm ultimately occurs. And using a metaphor, she said, we don't let drug dealers off if the thing they think is marijuana that they are selling turns out to be oregano. What matters is your state of mind at the time of the violation. Some justices were concerned with sort of nailing down just how much weight the government's view as to the propriety of dismissal should be afforded. No one called for any kind of Chevron-type deference, but if the seal exists primarily for the benefit of the government, shouldn't the government's view be dispositive? Or at least if there is a multi-factor test, shouldn't that be the heavily weighted factor? State Farm pointed out, though, that the government practically never claims that it's actually been injured. In fact, there appears to have only been one instance since the QI-TAM provision was enacted in which the government ever actually asserted that it had sustained harm from a seal violation. The government proposed a test in which the court would defer to the government on the question of actual harm, but could still nevertheless weigh the potential for harm in considering the severity of the violation. And so in sum, the court appears unlikely to adopt the Sixth Circuit's bright line dismissal rule, but it's clear that the court is struggling with exactly how to balance all of the equities in articulating a multi-factor test in a way that makes the most sense.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.